If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Good morning, everybody. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. Welcome to our show from our flagship station, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm here every week talking with you about the mental side of sports. You know, this show has been on the air now for 19 years here at Sports Radio 810 WHB, and we're in the process of getting the show around the country. We're podcasted, and our show is rebroadcast throughout the week, and our list of cities is growing, excited to say. So, you know, it's a show, really one of the only shows of its kind in the country, where we talk about your mind, your attitude, sportsmanship, confidence, preparation, focusing, how to deal with team building, how you coach the right way, how you deal with wacko parents on the sideline, what do you do when you fail, what's the difference between winning and losing. I've been in practice for 39 years. I'll be starting my 40th year of work after Labor Day. Looking forward to that coming up. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to have worked with so many great people throughout my career, and I love doing this show. It's my 29th year on radio here in Kansas City. And as I said, my 19th year here at Sports Radio 810 WHB. And each week I try to bring up a topic that I think is pertinent for us to talk about. And, you know, with society today and everything going on with the pandemic, with the whole changes that are going on in our lives, especially in sports, the mindset that we deal with all this is so important. And, you know, our last few weeks, we've talked about the whole psychological impact of the pandemic and the pressures on people. We've been dealing a lot with safety. I've had a number of people on the show talking about how to deal with safety, some medical professionals, some coaches. I had two athletic directors on last week, high school athletic directors, talking about how are they going to do it? How are they, if there is going to be competition at the high school level at your sport, how are they going to do it? Because obviously a lot of places are not going to play sports, but some are. And when we talk about all this, you know, the mental health aspect is, as you know, something I've talked about for years and years on this show. Athletes are people. They've got feelings. They've got to deal with things just like everybody else. But so many of us think, well, athletes, they're superhuman. Well, maybe physically they may be more advanced than some of us, especially more than I am, especially at my age at 65. But they're still people, and the emotional side is so important. So today we're going to have a special guest on. His name is Michael Seeley. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist in the San Francisco Bay Area. And Michael's a former competitive cyclist. He's been very successful in his cycling career, and he's been working now in this area as well. And we spoke last week, and thought it'd be great to have him on the show. So he's up very early in the Bay Area. Since our show is live in Kansas City at 6, he's up at 4 out there. And Michael, are you awake?
Dr. Jacobs, I am awake.
That's good. Good. Well, thanks for getting up so early and joining us today. I appreciate it. And, you know, this topic is something I've talked about for years on this show. And to be honest with you, a lot of people have blown it off. Oh, come on, Doc. You know, athletes, they're tough guys. You know, You're a former competitive cyclist all the way to the Olympic trial level. You're a tough guy, right, Michael?
Well, you know, sometimes.
Sometimes. And sometimes you're not, right?
Right. Because
we're all human.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the whole psychological aspect of this scenario our society is in now is so important. And for athletes to deal with this, I'm not talking about professional athletes per se, but everybody, it doesn't matter if you're collegiate level, the high school level, or just a weekend warrior. We've got a lot of issues we got to deal with now, don't we?
Indeed we do.
So what, from your perspective, working with the athletes you work with, what's been one of the big topics that's come up for you in terms of this whole situation right now we're living in?
Well, first of all, Dr. Jacobs, thanks for having me on the show. I think you do great, important work, and it's a pleasure to be on your show. And, yeah, I think one of the big topics that's coming up just broadly is lack of control. I think, you know, athletes their default is to not necessarily be a tough guy, a tough gal, but to have a real dominion and power over their sport. I mean, it's their identity. They use it to relieve stress. They're achievement oriented. And then, you know, when that's taken away, either your sport's curtailed or it's canceled outright, there's this loss of power. And I think that's really hard for athletes because they don't deal with that, you know, loss of control or loss of power for a long, you know, long-term basis. You could have an injury, you can be out for a little while, but this, you know, the situation that's going on right now is so uncertain. And I think a lot of people, a lot of athletes have not dealt with these feelings. It's like, you know, what is going to be happening in the next 6 months? What's going to be happening in a year? It is a new thing for all of us to deal with, a new thing for athletes to deal with. So the athletes that, you know, that I've worked with, and even just people I see in my therapy practice who are not athletes, are talking about this feeling of like, gosh, I wish, you know, I wish there's something I could do. Like, what can I do? I feel powerless.
And so I wish this really... thing would, and I wish this thing would end now, right? Don't you get that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just, you know, why can't this be over? What's going on? I want answers. So it's tough. It's this loss of, kind of control and agency that people are feeling.
Exactly. You know, that, as you were speaking there, that's what I was thinking, is it's the loss of control. And, and for an athlete, especially at the professional or collegiate level, they have lived a structured life in terms of their training, in terms of how they do everything. And it's gone because it's like it's gone. Now, pro sports is trying to come back. And obviously, you know, we've got baseball going on. MLS has been playing. The NFL's and it is in training camps. But it's not the same. I mean, I work with a number of athletes, and everything's so much more structured, so much more controlled. And that takes away, I think, for a lot of these people, some of their freedom, right? It's like there's I won't say there's a paranoia, but for some people there is a paranoia about, I better not do the wrong thing or I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah, you know, definitely people are on the edge. Athletes are on edge too. Is my sport going to, you know, is it going to open up and then be canceled? Like, kind of walking on pins and needles. And you know, it's a tough time for, especially for athletes, for all of us, of course. But one thing I was thinking about, is also just this feeling of identity, especially for athletes. It's, you know, it's like their identity is taken away in a way. If you're not playing your sport on a regular basis, if you're not going to practice every day, if you're uncertain about your future, it's like, who am I? It's almost like, you know, an athlete is confronted with retirement for the first time, and you must see this in, you know, your work with athletes, is transitioning out of their sport into like a different life, different career. That is coming up also. It's like, you know, what if I can't ever play sports again? What's my identity?
Yeah, it's a tough time for everybody. And, you know, as we talk throughout the show, I want to talk about, you know, especially kids and parents, because there's so much unknown right now. We don't know what's going to happen as we move into the fall, you know, how this pandemic's going to affect us in our lives. We're trying to go back to school. We're trying to get kids back into the classroom, but obviously some parts of the country, school's being canceled. Some parts of the country, it's going to be a hybrid situation. Some parts of the country, it's going to be the opportunity to go full time. So depending where you are, that is, it's a whole different situation. So we're going to talk about that. Joining me today is Michael Seeley. He's a therapist in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm really excited to have him on the show because he works with athletes as well. We're going to talk about this whole situation now and some coping strategies, how to get through this pandemic. If you're a parent, if you're a coach, if you're an athlete, if you're a sports fan, it's affecting all of us, obviously. And we're going to open up our phone lines. If you'd like to give us a call, as always, our number here is 913-3810-810. If you've got a question about this, how are you coping, how you're dealing with this, we'd love to help you out as well. 913-3810-810. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. We're on the Leader in Sports, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hello again, everyone. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. This is the Sports Psychology Hour from our flagship station, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. Joining me today is Michael Seeley. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist in the San Francisco Bay Area and works a lot with athletes. He's a former competitive cyclist himself. And of course, if you listen to the show, you know I worked with the Olympic, with our national cycling team from 1982 to 1988. And Michael, you probably were at one of the talks I gave years and years ago and probably didn't even realize it was me.
Yeah, we were talking before the show. I was at the Olympic Training Center in 1985. And, yeah, probably bumped into you.
Yeah. But obviously I left a great impression on you, don't remember me, but I won't hold that against you, so there you go. But anyway, we're talking today about mental health. And, you know, I've mentioned this a lot on the show. We have a lot of professional Olympic collegiate athletes now who are talking about their mental health. They're talking about how they're affected by things. This past week, the Texas Tech women's basketball coach was fired, resigned, because of an abusive situation down there. A number of players have claimed that she's been verbally abusive for the last couple of years as her tenure there. Athletes have transferred to other schools and talked about what they described as mental abuse by her, verbal abuse by her. We hear this all the time. You know, the psychological component of being an athlete is now becoming something that's being discussed. Of course, I think all this really came to prominence when Kevin Love had an anxiety attack a couple years ago and had no clue what it was and then figured out it was an anxiety attack, and he's now talking about mental health. We have Michael Phelps coming on shows a lot talking about the struggles he's had with, you know, he had an alcohol issue, he's been depressed. And, you know, Michael, when we talk about an athlete, the pressure to win. Let's forget the pandemic for a minute. Let's talk about the pressure to win. When you get to that top level, the collegiate level, the professional level, I always talk about if you're playing college sports, in my opinion, you've survived youth sports. You know, I have a book that I co-wrote with Jeff Montgomery, Kansas City Royals Hall of Famer, and Pete Malone, who is in the USA Swimming Hall of Fame as a coach, coached 5 Olympic gold medalists. And it's called Just Let Them Play, Guiding Parents, Coaches, and Athletes Through Sports. And we talk about the pressures that exist. And don't you feel that's, you know, when we talk about sports, just to start off with, if you made it to the collegiate level, you survived all this stuff?
Yeah, you made it through the gauntlet, you know. Especially what you're talking about with Kevin Love, you know, his panic attack that he had and his powerful story of just being – transparent and open about it. You know, you make it up to, you know, say Kevin Love's level, and you know, all those years he was dealing with panic attacks and anxiety and toughing it out, made it all the way through there,
and didn't know what it was, didn't even have any idea that's what was going on.
Right. Yeah, it also, and you know, makes me think about Steve Young too. The San Francisco 49ers had a book out a couple years ago. It's about his lifelong struggles with anxiety, and he just finally kind of spilled the beans after his retirement, of course, but it's an incredible story. So I encourage anyone listening to check out Steve Young's story and making it all the way through, you know, high school and college and, you know, pro sports, and finally admitting, like, oh my god, I have a problem here. I can't always handle anxiety or depression. I am human. It's okay to get help.
Well, the problem with this, in my opinion, okay, with all the years I've worked, especially with these professional and Olympic level athletes, is for many of them, they don't even realize what it is. You know,
yeah.
I mean, because it's never been discussed. It's been looked at as a sign of weakness. It's been looked at that there's something wrong with you. I don't care who you are. We all have anxiety. All of us do. We all have to deal with stress. We all have to deal with pressure. And it's how we learn to cope with it. And unfortunately, and you've listened to several of my podcasts, I've talked about this for a long time in the context that, you know, most coaches aren't very good at the psychological aspect of things. I'm not saying a lot of them aren't, but a lot of coaches are not very good at looking at the psychological component of things. And you know, when they have practice, we start, let's go out there, we got to practice, got to be tough, whatever. They, you know, if you fail, then you go run wind sprints. Well, okay, I get it, conditioning things. But if you fail, if you miss a free throw, you're going to run wind sprints. What's the benefit of that? Okay, you might be in better shape physically, but is that going to help you shoot better free throws? And then how are you dealing with the anxiety about missing that free throw? So then you have that fear of, oh, if I miss, I'm going to run. And then you think about missing, and then you end up running, and then you think you're terrible, and then everybody gets mad at you. So what do you think we need to do to change the culture, Michael, of coaches and dealing with failure when you coach?
Yeah, first of all, there is there's a benefit to having a little bit of a tough guy or tough gal kind of edge to you. I think that can be, one of the tools in your tool belt. And I think that's okay up to a point. I think it's okay for a coach up to a point to have that kind of little bit of edginess.
And I agree with that. I'm not sitting here saying, yeah, oh, come on, you can't do that. I totally agree with you. But there's a point where you can go over the edge.
Exactly, yeah. So there's a point where coaches, I think, really need to be attuned to what's going on individually with each athlete. Because you can give one athlete that treatment, and they're like, all right, another one, it can really affect them. So I think coaches really need to be tuned into the psychological character, individual unique character of each of their athletes they're working with, and get a read on that, be really aware of that, and that's a challenge for a coach, because oftentimes their athletes aren't going to speak up and say, hey coach, lay off. But I think it would be great if coaches got some more specific training on that, more sports psychology training. I think also in general, having more meetings with their athletes, either individually, like, hey, how you doing? Just kind of like, more of a casual meeting, or more, more team meetings, and get that communication opened up. Because the more you communicate with your athlete, if you're a coach, the more likely they're going to come to you in a time of need.
Well,
feeling
excuse me. You say that, and I agree 100%. And throughout my years of work, I'm one of the first trained sports psychologists in the country. I've been doing this, as I said, for almost 40 years now. And Will County grad school, 41 years. And there have been teams that I've worked with where, just to give you an example, I worked with the Kansas City Comets indoor soccer team back in the 80s. And our head coach, Rick Benben, who's one of my closest friends, wonderful guy, worked with Rick throughout his career coaching at UMKC. We had a schedule where I would meet with the team every 10 days, and didn't matter. And this is right at the very beginning of this, when nobody had heard of sports psychologists. But I met with the team every 10 days. Didn't matter if we won or lost, what was going on, and it worked. The players opened up. They learned to trust me. I was an integral part of the team. Rick ended up getting fired in our third year. I was there. Fourth year I was there. And unfortunately, he shouldn't have been fired, but we had a bunch of injuries and weren't playing well. And the guy who came in, I'm not going to get into who he was, but he didn't believe in it at all, stopped the meetings, and didn't want players really hanging out with me because he thought it was a sign of weakness. And unfortunately, that's a big problem that we've got with a lot of coaches today, is they see this as a sign of weakness. So we're going to get into this in our next segment, Michael, because I want to talk about your perspective working with athletes and coaches, especially in the context of the situations in life today. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. Joining me is Michael Seeley, a marriage and family therapist in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, our number is 913-3810-810. Hello again, everyone. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs from our flagship station, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My guest today is Michael Seeley. He's a marriage and family therapist in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're having a really interesting conversation. And if you'd like to join us, if you have a question about how to cope with sports today, the lack of sports, or your fear of playing sports, great opportunity to give us a call. Our number is 913-3810-810. Michael, one of the words that comes up a lot from a lot of my clients is fear. And there's the fear of success, the fear of failure, fear of letting people down, expectations of others. But in society today, with the pandemic and the unknown scenario we live in, how much do you think fear plays a role with the people you're working with, and what do you think we can do about it?
Oh, yeah. Especially right now, there's a lot of fear, of course. I think the role it plays is kind of paralyzing people in a way. You think about the actual physiological functioning of fear. It's, fight, flight, or freeze. It's this very primal thing. And, it's driven by stress hormones, and you can actually measure fear on a brain scan. It's So it's a real thing. And, you know, people I've been working with, there is a lot of fear out there. And, you know, there's a kind of a funny, kind of cheesy acronym I like to use for fear, F-E-A-R. And I like to say, I'm actually stealing this quote from this guy named Zig Ziglar, who does a lot. It's like a self-help guy from back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Oh, yeah. He was very, very popular.
Yeah. But he has this great sort of mantra acronym for fear. He said you could look at fear as forget everything and run, F-E-A-R. Or you could look at it as face everything and rise. Now, as cheesy or as corny as that is, it kind of works. And I like the people I work with to say, okay, look, it's normal. First of all, normalize fear. You're human. You got the standard issue human body. Of course, you're going to feel fear. Now, how do you want to use that fear? Do you want to have it paralyze you, or do you want to use it as a signal that, hey, something's wrong here, and it's okay, I'm getting these signals. What do I want to do about my fear? How can fear inform me? What's it trying to tell me? And be a little more curious about it, lean into it. And sometimes, you know, you need a professional to help walk you through fear. You may not have the skills. I like to call it skills, not, you know, any kind of mental problems, but you may not have the skills to walk through fear, especially at a time like what's going on right now. So I like to look at fear as sort of like a counselor or an informer or a signal, and it's trying to tell you something.
You know, I love what you're saying, and I agree with you, obviously, 100%. One of the problems with that is, I always like to say, a good coach is a good psychologist, a bad coach needs a sports psychologist. A lot of coaches use fear as a motivator, but they don't understand their athletes psychologically enough that to comprehend or understand that when they use that fear with some athletes, it's counterproductive.
Yeah, I think you're right. Using fear, again, if you use it in a way, or if you're able to use, you know, maybe natural fear, maybe not from a coach, but in a way that empowers you, informs you, that's good. And of course, a coach needs to be really careful about that. Maybe a tiny bit might be okay. I would say probably none with younger athletes. I don't think there's any real place for that. But coaches need to be aware of really the power that they have. You know, these athletes are looking up to them. You know, what the coaches say about them is really important. So there's all this power dynamic going on. And I think coaches need to be really aware of that, using fear in a way that's where you're not even really conscious of the negative effects of it is irresponsible. And, you know, it would be great, again, for coaches to get more training in the psychology of the sport.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Several years ago, read an article about the Seahawks in a ESPN magazine, and that year they won the Super Bowl. And their offensive line coach, Tom Cable, was quoted in the article. And this is in the summer before they won the Super Bowl. And he was a former Raiders head coach. And he said, you know, I didn't know how to coach until I came here. I was wrong. I used to yell and scream and criticize and insult my players. But then when I came here, I realized that was the wrong way to do it. Now I listen to my players. And that really stuck with me, because obviously, you know, the old school method, and I'm not saying, you know, coaches shouldn't get on players. I mean, yeah, I get it. You've got to find ways to everybody's motivated differently. And today we have a whole new wrinkle in the scenario because of the pandemic. So there's the fear of getting sick and dying now. Obviously, fortunately, we haven't heard of any professional athletes who have died from the pandemic. We hear a lot of them catch it. Everybody seems to be recovering, and it seems like more and more people are catching this but are recovering and end up being okay. But there is that fear, and I've got several professional athletes that I work with, some NFL players who are in training camp right now, who've said, you know, that we're having meetings, we're talking about it. Several of these guys, they have psychologists on their team who've had meetings with the team, and they've talked about dealing with their feelings, dealing with the anxiety about this. And that's been good, and it's been healthy because it's given them the opportunity to voice their concerns and share how they feel about it. Because a lot of people I work with have families, and one fellow I talked to yesterday said, "Look, Doc, you know, I'm in training camp now, but when my family gets here in a couple of weeks, you know, my wife is concerned about what if she goes out with the kids and she catches this, then she gives it to me. The guilt she's feeling is terrible." So there's all this fear about this, and I think talking about it's, you know, one of the best ways to solve it and coming up with game plans for it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The more you can talk about it, the better. You know, people I think I've seen, at least in my private therapy practice, some people are, you know, reluctant to talk about it because just there's a fear of finding out more. You know, what if I, you know, talk about this, I find out more facts. Oh, it's even worse news. But the fact is we're getting more and more information on the coronavirus. You know, there's more and more data coming out. And the more you can talk about it, the better. And what I like to talk about with some of my clients is worst-case scenarios. Like, just straight up, let's talk about your absolute worst fear. And let's walk through it because we're doing this, you know, in a safe environment. We're talking about this. And just literally talk about what is your worst fear. And when you break it down, oftentimes, most often, you realize that, okay, what are the odds of that actually happening? And I like to work with people around percentages and numbers. What's the percentage chance you think that you're going to die, you know, from COVID? If you're an athlete, 25-year-old athlete, healthy, you know, it's like it's very low. Of course, people are worried about spreading it to people, you know, who are elderly as well. And again, let's talk about that worst case scenario. How would you, you know, protect that person? What are some practical things? And when you talk it out in the worst case scenario, you get a lot of insights. You know, use someone as a sounding board. It's not all in your head. You don't have to figure it out all by yourself. You don't have to have all the answers. So, the more you can talk about just your worst fears and open up. And I think coaches can do that as well. That's a skill to have. Encourage your players to talk about their worst fear, you know, and let's talk it out.
What you're saying, see, to me, the healthy part of this is talking, sharing, expressing, opening up. For years, it's been looked at as a sign of weakness if you talk about how you feel. Now we're seeing, you know, other than, you know, if you play sports, you got to be tough, you got to be strong, you got to be mentally tough, physically tough. Now it's okay to talk about what you're scared of, what you're afraid of, especially in the scenario we're living in today. And it's okay to discuss it because so many of these things, oftentimes most of these things are irrational anyway. I mean, you worry about things that aren't going to happen, but it's good to talk about it and discuss it. And that's the importance of having, you know, somebody who understands that. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. My guest today is Michael Seeley. He's a marriage family therapist in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're having a great discussion. If you'd like to join us, our number is 913-3810-810. If you've got a question or comment, love to hear from you. Hey, I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. This is the Sports Psychology Hour. My guest today is Michael Seeley. He's a marriage and family therapist in the San Francisco Bay Area. Got up really early this morning to join us as we're having a great conversation. I really enjoy this, Michael. You're doing a great job with our discussion here. And you know, I want to ask you your definition of three words that I ask my clients all the time in the first session they come in. You're a former competitive cyclist. You made it to the Olympic trial level, so you get all this stuff as well as being a therapist. So what's your definition of winning, first of all? What would your definition of winning be?
Well, let's see. Definition of winning, I would say progress. And working with a lot of my clients and also working with some athletes and teams as well is, so how do you define winning? What is that? And I would say it's progress, it's growth, it's contribution, more the deeper principles behind that championship attitude. If you're looking at simply winning just the first game or first race or whatever ahead of you and you're putting all of your identity into that, all your self-esteem into that short-term winning, I think that's a mistake. You look at it as a longer-term growth. Like a metaphor I like to use is a tree. You know, if you cut a tree, you look at the rings of growth in the wood and the tree. That's my definition of winning, and I like to talk about that with some of my clients, this concept of growing, always growing, and even, you know, after you retire from your sport, keep growing, keep contributing to the sport that you love. So that's how I like to talk about winning.
Okay, that's great. I'm going to jump in on that when we're done with these three definitions. Okay, what about losing? How would you define that?
Okay. Well, there's the sort of the standard definition of losing is that, you know, it's a failure. You're a failure. You broke something. It's, you know, that kind of scarcity mindset. I like to think about winning, or sorry, losing as, well, maybe that was a Freudian slip, winning. You know, it's if you can learn from a loss, you know, it's just a sport, right? So it's like, what can you learn from the loss? Can you use that as an opportunity for growth? So not taking it so personally, losing, not like, you know, the whole team is a failure, the coach is a failure, a loser. Like that word loser, like, makes no sense to me. Like, you only lose if you completely quit or give up, or, you know, not even then. I think losing is an opportunity for growth, honestly. What can you learn from that quote-unquote failure?
Exactly. Okay, and so the third word is, two words, self-confidence.
Self-confidence, yeah. You know, I think that comes with faith in yourself, trust in yourself. I would translate to trust. Because even if, you know, you get the most self-confident athlete who's, you know, won multiple championships, all these kinds of things, there's always more to achieve. So I think it's trust in the future, trust in your ability to figure it out, not just by yourself, but, you know, talking to your team, talking to your coach. Self-confidence is trust.
Okay, I love the way you define all three of these. Because, see, to me, winning, my definition of winning is, did you accomplish your goal?
Uh-huh.
And to me, it's not about coming in first place or third place or fifth place, whatever. It's, did you accomplish your goal? And, you know, what did you learn about yourself? How did you grow? It's about self-improvement. Losing is, you didn't accomplish what you wanted, but that doesn't mean you failed. Okay, maybe you got something done, but you didn't, you know, get to the top. But that doesn't mean you're a failure. And confidence to me is the belief in yourself. The problem I see with so many athletes, especially when they get up to the high school and collegiate level and beyond, is that they've obviously won a lot and succeeded a lot. But along the way, so many of them, when they have confidence issues, even at those levels, you know, I see all these pro athletes that have lots of confidence levels because they will have been ridiculed at some point for not winning when they were younger or screwing up or failing. And the message that, you know, the message we get from coaches and teachers at young ages is really strong, and it has big time impacts. And I think, you know, listen, If somebody's misbehaving or acting out, I get why a coach is going to get mad at him. I've got no issue with that. But when you miss a free throw or strike out, and then, you know, I had a softball player I've mentioned on this show, eighth grade softball player last summer. She got two big hits in her first two at bats, and then she made an error at first base. The coach then kicked the bucket he was sitting on, stood up, kicked the bucket into the fence, knocked all the bats and helmets off the bat rack, pulled her out of the game and glared at her and said, "You're out of the game." Didn't say a word to her after that. This girl's sitting at the end of the bench crying, and the parents then, you know, the next day called me and came in, and I said, "Listen, you got to have a meeting with this coach, and you got to talk to him about what he did. That's just wrong, okay? It's fine. If he wants to take her out of the game, that's his choice. But you don't yank her out and glare at her and don't say anything to her because she made an error." So what's the message that's giving to her, Michael, from your professional opinion, then what's the message that young girl's getting? An eighth grade girl, she's 14 years old.
Yeah, you know, like we were talking about earlier, coaches have so much power especially the younger athletes. They really admire their coach. They really look up to them. It's almost like, you know, a parent or a father figure. So I think, first of all, coaches really need to realize that the role that they have and the power that they have, and they can wield that in a good way or, you know, like in this case, a really negative way. And so the example that's being set for this girl is that this is how I should react to, you know, an error or failure or just part of the game. This is the way it's done. This is the way adults do it. And I need to imitate that. So it's really teaching this kid some really just bad behavior, first of all. And then what it's doing to this girl's, you know, self-esteem, self-confidence, is that, like we're talking about self-confidence, I like to define it as trust in oneself. And if that is the sort of fear that's being instilled in this girl from the coach, you know, it's really harmful.
You know, I've been fortunate to have worked with so many great people throughout my career. And one of the great coaches I had the privilege of working with was Rusty Kuntz, Kansas City Royals first base coach, when they won the World Series. And I was a Royal psychologist for several years, and we got a player in a trade who's an outfielder. And in talking with this young man, he was saying to me, you know, Doc, I don't really know how to play the outfield. And, I mean, the kid was very talented, very fast, but he said, I don't know how to play the caroms off the walls. I don't know how to, you know, where to throw the ball sometimes. I said, how do you not know that? You're a Major League Baseball player. You've been in the up and down the minors and majors for 5 years. He goes, nobody's ever really taught me. And I said, you know, let me go get Rusty. So I went out, got Rusty. I said, hey, would you come join our session? Oh, sure. So they came in and we started talking, and Rusty's asking questions about, well, let's see, you're on this team. Oh, well, no wonder this guy, well, he doesn't know how to coach. And then you're with this guy. Well, this guy, all he does is negative stuff. And you're with this team. So Rusty said, you know what? We've got to sit here and we got to work on this. So this young man and Rusty then spent several days. He came in early, and they'd work on his fielding and his positioning in the outfield. And all of a sudden, this kid was playing awesome. His confidence got better. And then in our sessions, he said, you know, Doc, I realize now I was never coached the right way. I was always criticized and insulted and degraded. Now I'm finally with a coach who's coaching me. And, you know, and I've made mistakes, but he doesn't scream and yell at me. He sits and talks to me about why I made the mistake and how can I make it better. That's what good coaching is about, right? Don't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really about empowering your athletes and not making them dependent on you, either dependent on, you know, for praise or approval or whatever. But I love that story of just that relationship, cultivating that relationship between coach and player. And then the player begins to trust the guidance. And in doing so, that empowers them to say, well, okay, here's this person who's got all this experience. I look up to them, and God, they respect me. If I make a mistake, you know, I'm not going to be judged. I let go of my fear. I can relax. I can get in the zone more. God, this person trusts me. I think I trust myself. So it's really, you know, it's an example of trust and relationship, and that's a great story there.
Yeah, it is, and I like to share that. Now, listen, we've got to wrap things up today, Michael. I'd love to have you back on again. I know getting up early 2 hours at 4 o'clock in the morning isn't the easiest thing to do, but I appreciate you being here. Listen, if people want to get a hold of you, because our shows are podcasted all over the place, they're, in fact, we're listened to in a number of countries all over the world, how can people get a hold of you if they'd like to reach you?
Yeah, the easiest way to do it is just Google me. My last name, Seely, spelled C-E-E-L-Y. Seely Counseling or Seely Sports, plural, Seely Sports or Seely Counseling. Google that. You'll find me, all the contact info there.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I really, really appreciate it. You've given some great insight and advice, and it's good to talk to somebody who gets it like you do. I very much appreciate you joining me today.
Dr. Jacobs, it's a pleasure and a great show you have.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. You can reach me several ways. My email is drj@winnersunlimited.com. My website's winnersunlimited.com. We just revised it. My office number is 816-561-5556. Have a great week. Stay safe and have fun.